Next session, we have Mr. Guy DeBell, Deputy Governor, Reserve Bank of Australia, join us. He will be giving us some background on the FX Global Code of Conduct. We'll be presenting through a video link from Australia. So if everyone can please join me in welcoming Guy. And Guy, over to you.
Okay, great. Thanks very much. So as said, I'm going to talk about the FX Global Code of Conduct. So the Global Code of Conduct was launched earlier this year in May in London. It's available on the Global Foreign Exchange Committee's website, www.globalfxc.org, or probably more easily for all of you, through the Hong Kong Treasury Markets Association. So today I will reiterate the motivation for the work that we did in putting the Global Code together, highlight its main features, and talk about how we look to get people to adhere to the code and outline where things are at now and what it means for you. So firstly, why has it actually been necessary to put together a global code of conduct for the FX market? I'm sure most of you are aware the FX industry has been suffering from a lack of trust for a number of years. And this lack of trust is evident both between participants in the market and, at least as importantly, between the public and the market. So the market very clearly needed to move towards a more favourable and desirable location and allow participants in the market to have much greater confidence that the market is functioning appropriately. So the Global Code sets out global principles of good practice in the FX market to provide a common set of guidance to the market. And I think this will help to restore confidence and promote the effective functioning of the wholesale FX market. So it's important to stress that the code is about making the market function better, not like some other forms of regulation which are sometimes said to impede market functioning. The code is very much about improving market functioning. And a well-functioning FX market is very much in the interests of all market participants. This clearly includes us as central banks, both in our own role as a market participant, but also because the exchange rate is an important channel of monetary policy transmission. And in this, in the globalised financial world, the FX market is one of the most vital parts of the financial plumbing. So one of the guiding principles underpinning our work is that the code should promote a robust, fair, liquid, open and transparent market. As I said, the code was published in May as a culmination of 2 years' work, and it was very much a public sector, private sector partnership. So I chaired a group of central bank representatives from the 16 largest FX markets in the world, including obviously Hong Kong, that had been commissioned by the BIS governors to develop the code. This central bank group worked together with a group of market participants chaired by David Puth, who I'm sure a number of you know, who's the CEO of CLS. David's group contained people from all around the world on the buy side, including corporates and asset managers, and the sell side, along with trading platforms, ECNs, and non-bank participants. And that group of market participants that David oversaw was also drawn from right around the world, and again, including Hong Kong. So our group all up contained representatives from all of the 16 largest FX centres, including both developed and emerging markets. So it included people from China, Korea, Mexico and Brazil, and India, as well as all the major developed FX centres. So all parts of the market were involved in the drafting of the code to make sure that all perspectives were heard and appropriately reflected. So there are two important points worth highlighting. First of all, it's a single code for the whole industry. It supplants the existing codes that have been present in the FX market, and that includes in Hong Kong, the code that, put out by the Hong Kong Treasury Markets Association. Importantly, the code covers all of the wholesale FX industry. This is not a code for just the sell side. It is there for the sell side, the buy side, non-bank participants, and the platforms. It reaches around the globe and across the whole industry. The way it is relevant for you will depend on the nature of your engagement with the FX market. What this means in practice is that the steps different market participants take to align their activities with the principles of the code will differ depending on the nature in which you engage with the FX market, both in terms of the frequency and the extent of it. The second point worth highlighting, as I mentioned earlier, is it's a global code. There is only one single global code for the FX market, which reflects the nature of the global nature of the FX market. And as I said, it includes all of the 16 largest FX centers in the world, and it's spreading out beyond that. So the code itself covers six main areas: ethics, governance, information sharing, execution, both e-trading and platforms and voice, risk management and compliance, and confirmation and settlement. It comprises 55 principles spanning these issues. And so the principles are written in plain language and can be easily read and understood by market participants. We road tested it on our own FX traders at the central bank, and even they were able to understand what the principles were on about. And the principles are supplemented by a suite of examples to illustrate their practical implications, application. So market participants had a number of opportunities to comment on the code in addition to the direct input of David Poos market participants group. So prior to its release, we gave circulated drafts of the full text to market participants for their review, primarily through the various foreign exchange committees around the world, but also through other industry associations. And through that process, we got over 10,000 comments on the code. So the final version of the code reflects our collective judgment as to what constitutes good practice in the market, taking account of the feedback received. One of our central aims in drafting the code is for it to be principles-based rather than rules-based. There are a number of reasons for this, but for me, an important reason is that the more prescriptive the code is, the easier it is to get around. Rules are much easier to arbitrage than principles. The more prescriptive and the more precise the code, the less people will think about what they are doing. If it's principles-based and less prescriptive than market participant, then market participants will actually have to think about whether their actions are consistent with the principles of the code. But we have not written a procedures manual. Rather, we have articulated principles that need to be taken into account. Individual firms may then take these principles and reflect them, and should reflect them in their own procedures manuals. Our aim in setting out these principles is to provide market participants with a framework in which to think about how they, for example, handle their execution. The emphasis here is very much on the word think. The global code does not provide the answers to all your questions, but it should help you ask the right questions. Alongside drafting the code, we devoted considerable time and effort to thinking about how to ensure widespread adoption of the code by market participants. Clearly, that's been an issue in the past with the various codes that have been in place in a number of markets. It is evident that they were ignored on occasion in the past, willfully or otherwise. We have worked with the industry to produce a principles-based code rather than a set of prescriptive regulatory standards. So the code does not impose legal or regulatory obligations on market participants, nor does it supplant existing regulatory standards or expectations. So we are not regulators as central banks, we are market participants ourselves. But we have developed a blueprint for adherence that has been published alongside the code and is on the Global FXC website, which sets out the key elements we think will be required for the code to be successful and the steps that have been taken and will be taken to ensure this is the case. One critical dimension is market-based adherence mechanisms. An important element of discipline needs to come from the market itself. The adherence to a voluntary code will only come about if firms judge it to be in their own interests and take the practical steps to ensure the code is embedded in their practices in the market. Such practical steps would include training their staff and putting in appropriate policies and procedures. We have provided in Annex 3 of the code a draft statement of commitment for firms to publicly demonstrate their adherence to the code. So it's a fairly short 12-line or so statement for firms to sign saying that they are adhering to the code and they've done what is necessary to make sure that all of their staff are as well. One reason for a public demonstration is that firms are more likely to adhere to the code if they believe that their peers are doing so. That is, an important source of pressure to adhere should come from other market participants. So in the past, if you felt that you were being mistreated in the FX market and you threatened to take your business to someone else down the road, you're probably not all that confident that they wouldn't turn around and treat you in exactly the same way. Badly, that is. Now, I think with the code, there is much greater, it's a much more credible threat to say, I am going to take my business somewhere else to someone who will handle my orders appropriately or will give me appropriate pricing. So one of the aims of the code is to shift from that bad equilibrium to that good equilibrium. It will be a credible threat that you can take your business somewhere else to someone else who is participating in the market in line with the code. To provide visibility around those statements of commitment, public registries have been established where market participants can actually publish them. So CLS is already established such a public registry where people are able to post their statements of commitment so anyone can check as to who signed that statement of that commitment, be it another market participant, be it the press or whatever. And various foreign exchange committees are doing providing similar services, including here in Australia. You can check on the Australian FXC website as to who signed the statement of commitment. We also expect firms to publicise it themselves. So to date, we have had some fairly large market participants already sign up, including our hosts today, Thomson Reuters, as well as Citibank, XTX, and a number of large asset managers as well. More broadly, market participants have a vital interest and a role to play in promoting and upholding good practices in the market as a whole. This can be partly achieved by leading by example, but can also be supported, as I mentioned earlier, by having similar expectations of counterparties and other market participants and helping to raise awareness of the code in your market interactions. And to that end, the central banks themselves have signaled that they are going to sign the statement of commitment and will follow the code, and that they will expect their counterparties to do so. And in the case of us and a number of other central banks, we have said that we will not trade with anyone who hasn't signed their statements of commitment in the near future. Ultimately, the success of the code in promoting integrity and restoring confidence in the wholesale FX market lies in the hands of you, the market participants. Another aspect of market-based adherence comes through the foreign exchange committees. In due course, or in the case of Australia, by the end of the year, adherence to the code is going to be a requirement of FXC membership, and this is also true in the case of Hong Kong. That would ensure the code is embedded at the core of the FX market, given if you look at the coverage of the various foreign exchange committees around the world, you've probably got around about 90% of global turnover, whichever way you want to cut it. But it is also important that it extends beyond that core and that there is, at the very least, an awareness of the code across all market participants. There will be a period of time for market participants to adjust their practices where necessary to be in line with the principles in the code. That said, I don't think anyone should have all that much to do to do that. This period of time is not likely to extend beyond mid-2018. So by May next year, our expectation is that all market participants will have signed their statement of commitment. How much effort this might require, as I said, I don't think it should be that much, but will in part depend on the nature and extent of your engagement with the FX market. So I strongly encourage you to sign the statement of commitment if you haven't done so already. At the very least, I would ask that you familiarise yourself with the content of the code. If you don't have that much regular engagement with the FX market, I think the code is probably most useful for you in providing you with a guide as to how you should be treated by your counterparties in the FX market. Finally, it is vital that the code remains up to date and evolves as the FX market itself evolves. The code is now collectively maintained and updated by the Global FX Foreign Exchange Committee, which met for the first time in London in May. The Global FXC is chaired by Chris Salmon, who's head of markets at the Bank of England, and the deputy chair is David Puth of CLS. So it is once again a private public sector committee. It has half of the representatives are central banks and the other half are market participants from across the spectrum of the market. The Global FXC will regularly assess whether new information or market developments warrant updates or additions being made to the code. And as the first example of this, given the diversity of views that we received when drafting the code on Last Look, the GFXC requested feedback on trading in the Last Look window over the last few months. That feedback window closed a couple of weeks ago, and as at the moment we're processing that feedback and we'll meet in November to decide if and how the section on the principle on last look in the code should be updated. Note that these sort of changes are only going to be marginal relative to the code, so people should have confidence that the main content and body of the code is going to remain fairly durable through time. That said, on a less frequent basis, every 3 years or so, the global FXC will oversee a more comprehensive review to make sure that the code remains up to date. But you should be fairly confident that what is out there now is pretty much what it's going to be for the next few years. So the global FX code has reflected a very constructive and cooperative effort between the central banks and the market. We share the view that the global code plays an important role in assisting the process of restoring the public's faith in the FX market and also in helping improve market functioning and confidence in it. For the code to be successful, it needs to be widely adopted and embedded in all parts of the market. This is true both in terms of the various participants in the market, but also geographically. Again, I would ask that you read the code, think about how it relates to your operations in the FX market, and embed it in your operations. I'd very much encourage you to sign the statement of commitment and have the same expectation of your counterparties. So let me finish there.
Thank you so much for your insights. We certainly appreciate you joining us today. And we do have about 1 minute left, and we have a couple of questions here. From the regulator's point of view, what does a successful industry implementation of the global code look like? What would be the indicia of success? Guy?
Okay. So first of all, as I said earlier, I'm not a regulator, but I'll still answer the question. So I think success in the code is improved market functioning, it's increased trust in the market. It isn't necessarily the absence of bad behavior. What it is that bad behavior gets called out and addressed by the firm itself, rather than having to wait for 5 years down the track and a bunch of court cases get launched. So I think it's the biggest sign of success would be confidence of market participants that in their interactions in the market, they know or have a great confidence they're going to be treated fairly.
Okay, fantastic. Thank you so much for that. So I believe that wraps up this session. Again, thank you, Guy, for joining us this morning.
Okay, no worries.